How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making this part of your regular routine wherever you are listening to us, in the car, in the gym, at work. I want to thank you personally for making us a part of your day. It really means a lot to us. I am John Corrales, one third of the Rain and Jays, here for a crossover podcast with the Locked On Cavaliers show. Locked On Cavs' Chris Manning is joining me today to get into this Kyrie Irving, Isaiah Thomas trade from the Cleveland perspective. Who is Kyrie Irving? What type of player can we really expect? I know you watch him on a regular basis come into Boston or when Boston is there. We've seen him on national TV. We've watched plenty of him, but we have not seen him like we've seen our own players. And Chris is the local guy in Cleveland that sees him on a daily basis and can explain to us just who Kyrie is. What type of player are we really getting? And what type of player can he become? What type of things don't we know about him that may make some of us feel better about this trade and feel better about losing Isaiah Thomas, which sucks. That flat out sucks, no matter how you slice it. But this is going to be a fun conversation. So let's bring in Chris Manning to talk about this Isaiah Kyrie Irving trade.
Holy crap. I just want to say, like, to start this off, I did not expect the Cavs to make a deal with the Boston Celtics in any way, but particularly any deal that sends Kyrie Irving to Boston and sends Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas to Cleveland. Like, there's just so many layers to this, but let's start with this. What was your just initial reaction to this trade?
Well, when I first saw Shams tweeted out, my instant reaction was no. I have been on record all summer long since Kyrie made the trade demand that I was not pro Kyrie trade, because Kyrie and Isaiah, to me, are basically equal talents. Just in a vacuum, this past year, Isaiah had a better year, I think. So they're at a talent level is basically equal. But we know that their pay isn't. So I knew that Kyrie for Isaiah straight up, yeah, sure, that made sense. But to make the salaries match, the Celtics had to throw other players and assets into the mix that I, A, didn't want to lose, and B, didn't want to give to our direct competition to make them better and fortify the Cavs. Like, so I understand the argument that was made to me. Kyrie is younger, obviously, 25 years old. He has a much higher ceiling than Isaiah. I can't imagine Isaiah getting much better than the amazing season that he had last year. So there's that. And I get that under a stable team, no crazy ownership, no rotating general manager, no different coaching
every 2 years. Like, that could be the thing that unlocks Kyrie Irving and gets him to the next level of from stardom to superstardom. I get all that. But my biggest fear here is that in all of the craziness that has gone on in Cleveland that we've seen, and the thought that LeBron might leave, all of a sudden now we've given the Cavs and LeBron and his new general manager a replacement for Kyrie Irving, assuming that Isaiah's hip is okay. If he's healthy, then he is at least as good as Kyrie Irving has been in Cleveland, and we've seen that's all you need to go to the finals. We've given them Jay Crowder, which is exactly the type of role player the Cavaliers need, under a great contract for multiple years. We've given them a wild card young player who knows? He's a guy that could flame out. He's a guy that could be a decent role player. He's a guy who could surprisingly turn into a star. Who knows? And then we've given one of the most valuable picks potentially in the upcoming draft that can either be made to ultimately draft LeBron's replacement someday, or if they wanted to, could be flipped into another player in some other trade somehow. If all that happens and LeBron says, you know what, my new GM got me this package, got me these guys, got a setup for the future. I was thinking about leaving, but I'll deal with Dan Gilbert. I'm going to stay. That poses a big problem for the Boston Celtics because we're trying to get past Cleveland and we just fortified them. So that's where this entire deal is sticky for me. I'm not out there blindly celebrating, hey, we got Kyrie Irving. I know that could turn out really well, and everything I just said might not matter, and Kyrie Irving might become good enough with Gordon Hayward and Al Horford and these young guys that the Celtics have, might eventually get good enough to get past Cleveland either way, not this coming year, but eventually. Maybe that'll be the case, but right now, I can see great positive things for Boston, but I can also see that Cleveland should probably be celebrating, all things considered, especially that Kyrie made the trade demand, and it seemed like Cleveland had no leverage in this situation.
You're laying out all the reasons that I was surprised this deal happened. I mean, like, it's just like if you're the Cavs or the Celtics from other side, like you're giving your direct competitor something else. And I think we're both agreeing here. These are the best two teams in the Eastern Conference. Washington could get there. You have other teams that are good. I think these two teams are clearly the class of the Eastern Conference. And I don't know if there's any doubt. Like, it would shock me on in some ways if, like, this wasn't the Eastern Conference Finals matchup. The reason that I think, and we'll get to all the other players in a minute, but I think the reason this, for Boston, this ends up making quite a bit of sense. Because, like, if you just look at, like, I get what you're saying about Isaiah and Kyrie, like, being similar talent levels. Here's why I think, like, Kyrie, like, I think it's weird that, like, and again, we don't know all the deals, and it's all complicated, and, like, it's a complicated thing. Like, I think you rather would have Paul George or Jimmy Butler, or, like, theoretically Anthony Davis, like, right? But if you're going to cash it in on a star, what I think Kyrie can get to is beyond what Isaiah was last year. I think, like, the best version of Kyrie, and again, he's 6'3 and not 5'9, and I think that kind of does matter. It's one of the reasons why I think the Cavs are going to have some defensive things to figure out. Like, you can, like, work around him and Hayward and Horford and, like, eventually, like, a Brown or a Tatum. Like, I think you're giving yourself a chance to, like, be better for the long haul in a way that, like, Isaiah really wasn't. Like, it's, like, easier just to, in some way, to, like, just, if you're, like, you're looking at Kyrie and Isaiah's two things, and you can't because of the Crowder stuff necessarily, but, like, if you're looking, like, who you would rather pay, it's I think, like, Kyrie is the guy, like, you're going to back up that the proverbial Brinks truck for, like, to pair with, to be Hayward's long-term partner. And you have him for 2 years. I think that's a lot of time to sell him. I actually think, like, he's really, really going to benefit, and it's one of the reasons I'm, like, very intrigued by this, is, like, I think he's really going to benefit from playing under Brad Stevens. Because I think, like, Ty Lue's a really good coach. I think before that he didn't have great coaching, and coaching that really was going to put him in a system where he could thrive. Him in, like, that Boston system, to me, is going to be really fascinating. at the same time, like, I get everything you're saying. It's like the Cavs getting Crowder is giving the Cleveland the role player they've needed next to LeBron since he came back that they have not had. That Richard Jefferson was the version of that that they've had and that has worked, but Jay Crowder is like an upgrade over that. Zizic is immediately an upgrade over Eddie Tavares. And that pick like is a huge wild card for the year. I think they keep it, but it gives the like this trade gave the Cavs everything they wanted in a deal for Kyrie Irving.
Well, the problem here is that I've seen Paul George go for less than he should be worth, right? I've seen Jimmy Butler like, go for less than he should be worth, right?
It is absurd for what those guys got traded for, like in retrospect.
So, and I know each individual negotiation is different. Each team is different. I don't know what was going on between Cleveland and Boston in these negotiations. I feel like they're just by virtue of Indy and Chicago being in similar positions to the Cavs where they lacked any real leverage that Danny Ainge could have said, I'm not including Jason Tatum, nor am I including the Brooklyn Nets pick. It's going to be, if you're going to take Isaiah from us and you're going to take Crowder and you're going to take one of our young guys, then we're going to give you the Memphis pick and just be happy with that because no one is topping this. I mean, unless they looked at Milwaukee's offer of Middleton, Brogdon, and their pick as a potential competitive offer. I don't know. I don't know what that really was. I feel like the Celtics could have done better. And I'm honestly, I know this is a douchey thing to say, and I tweeted it. I'm so used to Danny Ainge coming out clearly on top of so many trades that this is one where I feel like he's not. He's there are big time questions here. And it's been a long time since Danny Ainge has made a trade where most of us feel like there are big time questions. There are a great many people who have a great deal of basketball knowledge who sit here and say, huh, okay, we'll see. We'll see what Danny's doing. So I can come around on this trade for Boston. I feel like the one thing that I'm overlooking is Danny Ainge has had a knack for getting rid of players at just the right time.
Yeah, where, he definitely does.
You know, that Rondo, Pierce, Garnett, I wonder if he knows something or feels something about Isaiah Thomas that makes him think, we've gotten absolutely everything we possibly can, that giving him up and that hip issue is going to be such a recurring problem that it's not going to be as high a price when you look at it in the end. And it's hard to judge trades. You know, it's hard to judge trades in the immediate aftermath because there are so many things that come into play. How are those guys going to fit us alongside LeBron? Is Kyrie really going to blossom under Brad Stevens? Or is he going to go into some kind of selfish, crazy hole? And is it going to be a mess? What's that draft pick going to be? What are they going to do with the draft pick? Are they going to pick the wrong player? Are they going to pick the right player? Is Brooklyn going to magically be good or good for Brooklyn, and somehow that pick becomes meaningless and it's like the 10th pick and I was worried about nothing. So it's hard to kind of judge this trade right now, but and I will say this, and this is for all of you Cleveland fans who are listening. Part of it is absolutely positively the fact that I just love Isaiah Thomas. I mean, this guy.
You mean every Boston fan, like, didn't burn his jersey?
Yeah. Oh, God.
I don't mean to get you going, but, like, that's like, the Isaiah, like shade that came out of this was really bizarre to me. Like, that's one of the weirdest things to me over the last couple days.
First of all, that jersey burning was, like, three guys who did it for social media attention, and they got it. Because there's nothing that gets media outlets in a frenzy quite like a player's jersey going up in flames. That was not a universal thing. We know when fans burn jerseys. We saw it when LeBron left Cleveland the first time. That's when fans really burn jerseys.
Even then, I would say like it's not quite as it's like never quite as like widespread as people think it is.
No,
it's always like the future.
So I would say 99.9% of Boston Celtics fans are crushed just because of what Isaiah Thomas has meant to the city. In 2.5 years, he immediately embraced Boston. He recruited Al Horford. He recruited Gordon Hayward. He recruited Kevin Durant. He's a big reason why the Celtics, he came in and just immediately the Celtics were just awesome with him on the floor. Last year was literally one of the single greatest single individual seasons in Boston Celtics history. And when you think about all of the great players this team has had, he had one of the most exciting seasons and statistically one of the best seasons in team history. The whole King in the Fourth thing, the tragedy playing right after his sister was killed, the getting his teeth knocked out, dropping 53 after all that happened on her birthday. It was all fairy tale stuff. He was Mr. Boston Celtics. And I've said all along, it would be cruel, just downright cruel for Danny Ainge to trade him. And he did. And it just shows how dark and cold this business of professional sports can be. And that is absolutely playing a role in my opinion of this, because I've spent so long thinking that Kyrie is overrated and just completely falling madly in love with Isaiah Thomas, which I guarantee you Cleveland will fall madly in love with Isaiah Thomas.
It's really funny that like both of these fan bases have been like trashing the other point guard for like 2 years, you know, and like really last year. And then like Cavs fans have been like ragging on Jay Crowder for like forever, you know.
You're going to love him. Like, he is a badass. He's going to go out there and do all of the things that you want him to do. And you're going to see, when you see him up close, you're going to be like, oh yeah, I can see it. I can see it. And I'm sure I'll turn around on Kyrie. I'm sure I will. And I'm sure Kyrie and under Brad Stevens and everything will be great. I do want to, this is for Boston fans. Don't, if Kyrie has this big leap forward, don't just say it's all Brad Stevens, because it does take the player to work on his game and become that. And Brad Stevens' direction is going to have a big, big impact being around that team and those players in this situation and the city and that front office is going to be a big reason for whatever steps he takes forward. But it's also on the player to do the work. And if Kyrie does take that step forward and becomes a true superstar MVP candidate, then it is on everybody. I just don't want it. It'll end up enhancing the legend of Brad Stevens for sure. But I do want to say up front, before he even puts on the green, that he will need to get some credit if he does elevate his game to that level.
As someone who's watched Kyrie for 5 seasons, I will say like the first time he just destroyed somebody's ankles and it's for on your team, it's a pretty fun thing to watch. It's like a very, very, it's like a very, very fun thing to watch the first time he just destroys somebody. Before we continue this, just letting all our listeners know that it's really easy to get all the Locked On Network pods, Locked On Celtics, Locked On Cavs, every Locked On team, all 30 NBA teams, in one feed on iTunes. You can go search Locked On Network on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, and you can find every Locked On NBA team in one place. So if you wake up and you want to listen to about the Mavs, or you want to listen about the Kings, because your team just made a trade with some other team, or just signed some player from another team, you can do that. For me, I just did this to listen to Locked On Bulls, because I had to see about Dwayne Wade. And, of course, I listened to Locked On Celtics because I needed to get John and the crew's take on this deal, because it's one of the most complicated things going right now. So I will say this. Kyrie, with Stevens in that role, in a position where I think he's really going to have an opportunity to kind of blossom in a way he maybe hasn't in Cleveland, I think that's going to be really good for him. And I'm very excited to see him in that role. And I think it's a really, really cool narrative and a story that, like, Kyrie not only, like, left for LeBron, but he went to the place where, like, he will have to try to, like, end LeBron's reign. Like this is, like, the Eastern Conference Finals next year will be just so tense for that reason. And we're going to get this opening night. Like, we're getting this game, like, regardless of if Isaiah is healthy or not, regardless of, like, how the Cleveland crowd reacts to Kyrie, which I don't really have a good read on that yet. I think that's like it's just like a fascinating thing that we're going to probably get to see this in these very tense situations if things play out as we expect them to.
Yeah. Imagine the NBA's joy in looking at that schedule and all of this goes down like right away, immediately. Everybody's going to be looking at Kyrie versus LeBron, and that's how it's going to be billed. Kyrie versus LeBron, immediately night one of the NBA. Everybody's going to lose their minds. And I hope Isaiah's healthy enough. I know that he might not be, but there's drama there. I mean, man, that Cleveland-Boston rivalry just got ramped up once again. And it's kind of funny that LeBron is here for both versions of it, the Pierce version and now, you know, my former brother. We must fight to the death every year. You know, like, I can look at what the Celtics are trying to do, and I understand what they're trying to do, and I will come to appreciate Kyrie Irving for sure. I know that, like you said, he's going to come out there and drop some highlights, and I'm going to say, oh, whoa, yeah, Kyrie, and I'll come up with a meme and whatever, and we'll celebrate it, and it'll all be, you know, I'll forget about all the stuff that I used to say, although people, I'm sure, will remind me on Twitter, but it is going to be fun. But just for our fans, we like you said, we've been sparring with one another, trashing each other's point guards, but you saw him on a regular basis. Explain to my listeners that what exactly are we getting in Kyrie? What are we getting from the inside Cleveland perspective that we haven't seen watching on a national stage?
I'll answer this in two ways. Number one, I think you're getting someone who on the basketball court is going to be of it. It's like, I think he's KD described him as a 6'3" Isaiah, and I don't think that's totally inaccurate. I think you're getting someone who at his very peak, I think, could really lead a really good offense. I think you have someone who has some habits he needs to break. I think, like, he's someone who is friend of the both of our pods, Matt Moore, has tweeted about a lot. Like, Kyrie's numbers are there. His impact always isn't. And I think that's something, like, he will need that. I think Boston could be the situation that breaks some of these habits. But I think the Cavs, for a lot of reasons, really kind of let him be that. And I think in a situation where his tendencies might get pushed, where he's with a guy like Hayward, should be, I think, like, can maybe break him of those habits. Because I think it's really interesting, especially because, it's not exactly the same, but Boston and Cleveland are the same in the sense that, like, I think with Horford and I think with Hayward, you have two guys that can create for others, right? Like, in Cleveland, you had the same thing. You had LeBron, obviously, and you had Kevin Love. The Cavs were very unwilling to sort of let those three things sort of work as interchangeable pieces and kind of create for another and sort of run everything based on these three guys weaving in and out. Like, it was Kyrie and LeBron and just, like, them dominating. Boston, you would know better than me, but I don't think Boston's going to work that way. I think Kyrie's going to be part of this machine in a way he, instead of being, like, just, like, one of the, like, the guns on a tank, he's going to be, like, part of this thing driving everything forward. And I think that's going to be really interesting to see. I think you're getting someone who's going to fit really nicely into that. Like, FIBA International Kyrie might be very possible in Boston, like, just this free-flowing sort of guy Kyrie. I'll note that he's underrated as an off-ball player. Like, he gets known as what he does with a ball in his hands, and especially when he's being efficient while dribbling. I think you're getting someone who, when he's spotting up, when he's cutting, is a lot better than people give him credit for. And I think that'll fit in really nicely with Hayward. I think that fits actually really, really nice. It was what the Cavs wanted in 2014 before LeBron it came back, actually. But there's a story that Gordon Hayward was on Dan Gilbert's private plane to meet with the Cavs, and then LeBron was like, well, I might be wanting to come back, and the Cavs put everything else on hold. Off the court, you're getting someone who is different than Isaiah Thomas, and I think that is worth noting. Because whereas Isaiah was, like, the king in the fourth, he was the guy, like, tapping his, you know, what time it is and all this stuff. Kyrie's going to be emotional in that way. He's going to compete in that way. But in terms of, like, how he's going to, like, engage with people as this, like, personality, he's a little bit moodier than Isaiah Thomas. He's not, he's energetic, but he's kind of quirky and he's a little bit moody, and like he's not always the most like outwardly guy. Now I think like you fans like still love that guy. Like I think that's more of like a me as a media member being kind of like, well, Kyrie's not always the funnest guy to deal with. And I think and in that sense, like, he's different than Isaiah, and just like his personality is different. So I wonder how that like translates. Like, someone has made the argument to me that like that one of the differences between Kyrie and Lillard is that like Lillard elevates everyone and Kyrie might not do that. But I think I really, really think that like if he's in this situation where he feels everything is functional and he like trusts in everything in a way that I don't always believe he did in Cleveland, I think that can bring the best out of him. And I also think like he has, and I don't know how true this is just a guess, but if you look at like his life, like his dad, if you go to games, you will see his dad, you will see his sister quite a bit. Those are like his entourage a lot of the time. You will see someone, his dad like played at Boston U, I believe, and then tried out for the Celtics. I think Kyrie has a long-standing respect for that organization. I think he's very happy to go there. It's why like when David Griffin mentioned that Boston was interested in him on the jump, I was like, this makes a lot of sense.
Well, I mean, that's interesting. Because I think the perception is that he's, you know, the guy that pounds the ball into the floor and is Isaiah was prone to hero ball. I think every great offensive player gets prone to hero ball, but that Kyrie was even more so, to sometimes the detriment of the rest of the offense. And so to hear that him in a free-flowing motion offense it would work from your perspective, that is good for me, because that's what the Celtics need, because they've got a lot of talent on that team that needs touches. You know, if the starting lineup for Boston will probably be like Kyrie, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, and I'm guessing Marcus Morris and Al Horford. So I know that Hayward and Horford especially, get the ball and look to pass. Horford is always looking to pass. So to see and hear that off the ball, Kyrie can do stuff that we don't normally see, and that it was not entirely utilized in Cleveland. That's big. That'll be big for Boston. So that's good. Really important. Two really important questions. Let's start with this. Isaiah Thomas didn't play much defense because he couldn't. Kyrie doesn't play much defense because he doesn't want to. Is that accurate? And have you seen him play enough defense to think that he can, if he is motivated, to play defense?
I think he can. I'm not going to like defend his defense. It's atrocious. It's bad. But I think if you look at when he's played with effort in the finals, I think that Kyrie like could be a thing regularly. Like, I don't think it's out of the question that you get a Kyrie when he's like wanting to like do that, that can like have someone that can push him to do that. I think that could be really good. And I would note too, like, and I think it could complicate things against the Cavs in particular because of like Marcus Smart probably needing to defend LeBron. But I think having Marcus Smart as like a teammate of Kyrie's to defend point guards is a really, really valuable thing, because like, I think Kyrie like is never going to be good at he's going to be someone like what I think, like, if you look at him as in like he's not the same as Curry, because Curry like works on defense. But if you look at like what teams do to Curry and they attack him and like they try to get him in pick and rolls, a lot of teams will do that to Kyrie. Like, that's because it makes sense. I think like if you have a guy like Smart and you can put Kyrie in through someone off ball, like this is my guess. I think like depending on who Boston starts, my guess is that Smart would defend whoever, like maybe it's Isaiah, like it'd be Isaiah, right? And then like I think you could get away with Kyrie and J.R. Smith pretty easily. And I think in those situations, like, he'll be fine. And I think in a better structure, and if the team that, like, I'm very curious too, like, how Boston plays hard a lot more consistently than the Cavs did last year. Like, and I think that's just true. I wonder how that affects his defense as well. But I think he can be fine. He's never going to be a lockdown defender, but I think he can be fine and better than he was.
Okay. Well, that will ease the minds of some Celtics fans. So great. Yeah. We'll see. I mean, again, I admit my bias, and I'm very open to the possibility of him
And he definitely has work to do. Like, there's no question in my mind that, like, on that end in particular, and being a little bit more efficient when he does have the ball in his hands, I think those are two realistic things Kyrie does have to get better.
And he's 25, so there's a real chance that he's, first of all, he's still got 2-3 years to hit his actual prime. So, okay, you know, that's, that will definitely ease the minds of some Celtics fans. Those Celtics fans who have been on the fence, and I will include myself in that, that will, I think, make people feel a little bit better about the price that the Celtics paid.
Let me ask you this as a question about what Boston is giving up to the Cavs. Let's start with Isaiah. He's obviously very, very good. What are your concerns about him, A, coming off a hip injury, and B, coming off what is like quite possibly the best season of his career?
I mean, my concern is that the hip is a recurring problem that will maybe need some surgery. He did say that there is a structural, we'll call it, I don't want to say deformity because that's a very extreme sounding word, but there is a structural thing in his hip that makes it more likely that something like this will happen again. Now, I don't know. It took a while for it to happen in this season, and it's the first time that it's happened, that hip, like, to that degree. So it's not something that's been recurring, but now that it got to a point there where it happened, I don't know if that makes it more likely to be recurring. But at the same time, he has not played alongside anybody obviously nearly as good as LeBron, so he's going to benefit from the attention that LeBron gets. So in Boston, Isaiah had to create something out of nothing so often. And he's really, really good about actually, this sounds weird, but using his size to his advantage. And I've written and talked about this a lot. The one thing that he's been able to do, well, I mean, he's been 5'9 forever. So he's had a lot of time to learn how to use those things. And when he's driving, you'll see him get even lower and lower the shoulder. And because he's so small, he can kind of get away with a push-off. And he uses the momentum of a sliding defender against that defender. You see him get shots up over Hassan Whiteside, get shots up over other big, like a Rudy Gobert. Those guys are sliding and moving laterally, and Isaiah gives him a little bump to get him moving backwards a little bit, and he uses that bump to also push himself away from the defender. So he kind of creates a good amount of separation, and he's just been very good at extending that arm out and flicking these very high parabolic shots up towards the rim and getting them to fall. So it's kind of funny to say that a 5'9 guy can use his size to his advantage, but he's so far below most players' center of gravity that little bump really moves them a lot more than being bumped up high where they have leverage and that center of gravity is low and they can kind of stay still. He uses the physics against the defender and he creates a lot more space than you would expect. So back to the hip. I don't know. I really don't know what that hip is going to be ultimately. Luckily, he didn't need surgery this summer. I don't know if he will eventually need surgery. That would be very bad. But assuming that the rehab and the strengthening is going to work, he's going to be a guy that is going to be as dazzling around the rim almost as Kyrie was. I mean, Kyrie is a crazy master finisher around the rim. I know that. But Isaiah is also a crazy master finisher around the rim. And you're going to wonder how the hell he did those things because he's, what, 6 inches smaller than the guy you're used to seeing out there. So he is crafty, creative. He's worked on his three-point shot. It's been more efficient. He hits it from further out. And so he's done a lot to work on his offensive game. So what we saw this past season, I don't know if he can keep that up moving forward, but he can get pretty close because of a lot of the things that he's able to do individually, the work that he's put into his own offense, you know, getting a quicker release, taking some better shots, a little bit better shot selection, being a very willing passer. He's a very willing passer. I know Kyrie had his best passing season last season, but that was pretty much right on par of what Isaiah was doing, and he's been doing it for a while longer. So he can really facilitate as well. He's underrated as a passer. So, I mean, we're at a point now where I'm starting to gush a little bit about the guy because he's definitely one of those overachieving guys that we tend to love in Boston. But if that hip stays healthy, he's going to be really good. And if they can sign him long term, then I think that's going to be solid for the Cavs.
Yeah, I can tell like you're going to miss Isaiah.
Totally.
I can tell. And every Boston fan that I've interacted with has, you know, said the same thing. Like one of my best friends from college is a Celtics fan, and he's talked about that. How did Isaiah hang in the Warriors matchups last year? How did he do?
I thought he did pretty well. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but the Celtics beat the Warriors. Last year they beat them without Durant, but they went into they might have beaten the Warriors without Isaiah 2 years ago, if I'm remembering correctly. So I thought he did well. I mean, they're able to hide him defensively, and I thought he generally played well against the Cavs. There's nothing to be concerned about there.
Jay Crowder, he's someone that I'm like, I actually think like there's a chance he has the biggest impact of anybody in this deal next year out of Zizic and Thomas, because I think like he's a perfect LeBron fit. I think like him having to maybe do like less overall stuff should be good for him. The two things that I've read and kind of as I've looked into him that are intriguing to me especially are, one, he had his best shooting year last year. So one, is that real? And two, I've had some people tell me that his defense slipped off last year. Is that accurate, and is that a concern in your mind for him?
I think his defense did take a little bit of a step back last season. The season before, he was definitely much better as an individual defender. But I think that I don't think that's going to be as big a problem for you guys. I mean, first of all, he's a big, rugged dude, and he's a little small. But he's pretty good as a stretch four. Like he was most effective when the Celtics went small and they played him at the four. Like that's, I think, gonna be a situation where you play him alongside. You can play him alongside LeBron and have him play the four, and you'll be fine. His defense, yeah, I think. Individually, he had a guys blow by him a little bit more often. He has had ankle issues, so that's something to kind of watch for with him. If he can keep those ankles healthy, then some of that might kind of correct itself. As far as his shooting, he definitely took a huge step up shooting wise. In his time in Boston, he's shot really, really well. And each year he's really improved the shot. Last year he shot 40% from three. So he's going to be a 3-and-D guy. He's not going to lock down Durant if it comes down to the Cavs and Warriors again in the finals. Well, who is? But he's a guy that you can put on Durant, and it'll make Durant's life kind of tough. He's going to be one of the tougher guys that Durant will face defensively. So if you're looking for something along those lines, then yeah, that's going to be great. And it allows LeBron to kind of go back to roaming a little bit, which is where he was effective 2 years ago when Cleveland won the championship. So that's the biggest thing. When you look at the two final series, LeBron couldn't roam. He couldn't play free safety and make a lot of the defensive plays that he was able to make before. So I think Crowder, at least takes a big step forward to allowing LeBron to do that more often if you're looking towards another finals matchup.
Yeah, that's kind of my hope for the Cavs, is like if they can get Crowder to do that and be that guy, like it makes Richard Jefferson more of like a guy you can use in spots when you want to go really small, and it takes a lot of the pressure off LeBron and allows him to roam, like you said. I think that's like where a lot of his value comes, and I think like Crowder will just have to shoot open shots and like defend and rebound a little bit, and like that's all I need him to do, and I think that's really, really valuable. If you were the Cavs, like, would you bring him off the bench, or would you maybe adjust your starting lineup to make him start?
Huh. Well,
I can't figure out like if there's a good answer for this.
Yeah. Well, it may be a matchup based type of thing. Like, so you would start what, Isaiah?
It's so weird, by the way, just to like when you're saying like starters, you said Isaiah, and I was like, oh, he's talking about the Celtics, and I had to like remind myself.
Right. This is all so weird. Yeah. I can't. You could do Isaiah, JR, LeBron. No, see. Yeah. Well, how do you feel about playing Kevin Love at the five?
I think it depends on the team. Like, I think you could do it against Boston, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Although I would sit there and say, sure, please do, because defending Al Horford would be really fun to watch him try to do that.
I mean, he's done okay. He's done okay the last, like, 3 years. But, I think anyway. If you have, like, LeBron on, like, if that you have LeBron on Marcus Morris, like, that's almost a worth the, you know what I mean? Because, like, LeBron can double and you let Marcus Morris shoot. That's fine, you know?
Yeah. You could mix and match, really. So, I mean, you could do something crazy like Isaiah, LeBron, Crowder, Love, and Thompson, and go big minus Isaiah. You know what I mean? You could. I mean, why wouldn't LeBron do that? You could go Isaiah, Smith, Crowder, LeBron, Love, and then kind of mix and match LeBron and Crowder on whichever matchup you feel better defensively. You could absolutely do that and bring Thompson off the bench, or you start Thompson and you bring Crowder off the bench, or you bring Kevin Love off the bench. I don't know what their appetite for doing all that is, but you can find a starting lineup for Crowder, or you can use Crowder as a way to get LeBron some rest and bring him off the bench, and then you still get Crowder his normal 30-some-odd minutes per game in just different substitutions, right? I mean, your starters are in your starters for the first few minutes of the game, and then Crowder comes in, and whatever, he could be a part of your finishing lineup. So it's a weird mix in right now. I'm looking at the lineup here, and it is a weird mix.
It is a little bit weird. I think like the one that like intrigues me the most, like in terms of utilizing Crowder, is if they go like kind of really long and they go like JR defends the one, you have LeBron, RJ, Crowder, and Thompson. Like that to me would be really, really interesting. So you just go really long, everyone's 6'5" and above. Like you're upgrading over like using Derek Williams in that lineup, and like RJ becomes like your worst guy, and like that's like a lot better than they were last year. But I think you're right. Like I think like it could be very much matchup based. John, let's kind of wrap it up in this one sort of question. I don't know if it's not really fair to ask this now, I would say, but like I'm gonna ask it. Did one of these teams win the deal or not? Like did one team get a better immediate return on this than the other?
I can't say for sure right now. It's hard because if like in the best case scenario, both teams did well in this deal, and you can say this benefits both teams. That in Boston, sure, even if you say they gave up a lot, they are still getting back a 25-year-old star point guard that, when Danny Ainge talking timeline, he's got him for this season and next season. And then if you give him a 5-year extension and he takes it for 5 more years, so you've got him for 7 years, and even after that, he'll be 32. So that's his entire prime. And by the end of Kyrie's full 7 years, Isaiah Thomas could be retired. So for Boston, that's a big deal. For Cleveland, if everything goes well, like I said at the top of the show, you have the potential for all of this craziness that kind of plagued Cleveland summer to settle down. And maybe LeBron says, I'm actually going to stay. And he's not pissed off at Gilbert, or he puts that behind him anyway. And he says, I will stay here. I've got a new GM that just got me these guys. We're still going to the finals, or legitimate finals contenders. We have a chance to take on the Warriors. And if Isaiah's healthy and you get him long-term, at least for the next 3 years, then you've got yourself a championship window that's held open. So a bunch of things can go wrong that in the end we'll look back on it and say, woof, boy, this was terrible. But a bunch of things can go right. And depending on where your perspective is, we can say, oh, that wasn't so great either. So it's I can't sit there and say anybody won or lost this deal just yet, because there's so many variables. We don't know what's going to happen.
No, I think you're 100% right on that. Like, I think it's all relative. Like, it's all sort of like a lot can change and a lot can happen here. I think both teams sort of like got what they can say, like they got what they wanted. And that's like a very rare thing, I think, in a trade, right? Like, Boston can say, we got our star to pair with Gordon and Al. That's going to be good for the next 5-6 years that we believe will re-sign here when his contract is up in 2 years. And that it puts you in a position to be the best team in the East when LeBron leaves, if he leaves. And then for the Cavs, you say, look, like, we got short-term help to say LeBron, like, we're trying to win right now. But you also got the way to say, look, like, if you do leave, like, we're not going to have the 2010-11 Cavs again. We're not going to have, like, Antoine Jameson and Anthony Parker and, like, the crap that was on that team, like, be our for a year. And then just have to get lucky to get Kyrie in that next lottery and get out of this. Both teams, I think, really can say, we got what I want. And I think, like, we'll know, you know, in 9 months or whatever, how long it'll be, really, like, how both teams ended up and what it actually means and how they match up. And it's going to be really fun, I think, to kind of watch these teams sort of duel each other all year and see, like, how they go and, like, how these teams adjust and how these teams, like, how it just looks to watch them play each other, considering, like, they're both going to know each other, right? Like, there's only so much, like, Kyrie is going to, like, both these guys can really say that they don't, like, these teams don't already know. But it's such a weird thing to have such important players in a rivalry switch sides. Like, we're not, like, if you just think about 3 years ago, like, Jay Crowder was smacked in the face by J.R. Smith. And, like, pushed by Kendrick Perkins. And, like, they got, like, in a fight on the floor. Like, that's just, it's, like, so weird that, like, you're having, like, it's not, like, an immediate thing. But it's not like these two teams, like, liked each other. They're not, like, as like, gonna fight each other, like, on the court or anything like that, but it's not like these two teams, like, loved each other. There's a competitiveness there to this. Like, we're how many months removed from Kyrie, like, talking ish to like, pointing at the scoreboard when Isaiah and Marcus Smart were jawing at him. Like, it's so weird that these two teams made a deal with these vital players to their teams.
It's really bizarre, and it's gonna take me a long time to get used to it. I've got one last question for you. I know I said I had two questions earlier. I only asked one of them.
Oh, that's so, my bad for moving on. I apologize for that.
No, I lost my train of thought there for a second, and it's probably good because I want to save this question for an absolute last, and it's the most important question. Does Kyrie Irving actually believe the world is flat?
No. It's an important question, but I love all the jokes that happened after this, like the Boston Globe jokes in particular. Like, I believe it's actually a globe. But I don't think he does. I think, like, he's making a very obtuse point. I think Kyrie's a peculiar guy, to put it nicely. And I think he can be a peculiar guy. And I think he was, like, trying to make a very obtuse point and doesn't really believe that.
Okay.
But if he does, I can't defend it. Like, I'll just say that. Yeah.
I mean, like, look, that was the joke, right, after the trade. Like, he's... The possibility of him being a flat earther is just mind blowing, and whatever, as long as he gets buckets and helps the team win, we'll look past just about anything when it comes to that. But I kind of would like to know that he's joking for sure, because that would help me a lot.
Yeah, just Jay, just be like, hey, Jay King, when Kyrie has his presser or whatever, can you just ask him straight up? Like, just get it out of the way. I'm actually, like, very curious to see, like, how he, like, it's not important, really. And I, like, because I know, like, KG, like, wasn't, like, super friendly with the media, and because it's KG. But, like, I'm very curious to see how, what Kyrie and the Boston media, like, how they interact with one another. Because he's not, like, the, like, I would say, I'm not, like, a daily beat reporter, like, but I've been in the locker room, and, like, just knowing, like, what some of the, like, the guys that cover the team have said, like, Kyrie's not the easiest guy to, like, deal with. And Boston is, like, this very intense sports town with a very, like, rabid media. I'm very curious to see how that, like, that aspect of this sort of plays. I don't think it's, like, going to affect him negatively, but I'm kind of curious to see, like, how that, that relationship sort of works.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I will say that the assembled Celtics media is not anywhere close to the media that covers, say, the Red Sox. There are very few adversarial type of reporters in the Celtics locker room. Having known basically all of those guys, they'll ask direct questions, but there are some, and people who are from Boston can probably guess who I'm talking about, that are, especially in Red Sox locker rooms, and at some point, sometimes the Patriots, that are kind of adversarial. I think he'll be fine in the Celtics locker room, but I guess we'll see. Because, like I said, these guys aren't adversarial, but they're still direct. So, curious to see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. This whole saga is interesting. But John, thanks so much for taking the time. We could get through this whole thing.
Yeah, look, I think we might have made each other's fan bases feel a little bit better. Although I think Cleveland's fan base probably felt pretty good, all things considered. So,
it's still just so weird. It's just so bizarre.
I look forward to doing more of these as the season presses on.
Yeah, me too. All right, John. Thanks so much.
Great conversation. Thank you, Chris. And thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing to the Locked On Celtics podcast. If you are not a subscriber, all you've got to do is search Locked On Celtics everywhere podcasts are available. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. We are available on Spotify. We are everywhere you get a podcast. And if we are not, for some reason, let us know. We will get there. We are going to be everywhere you search. If you are a subscriber and you have not given us 5 stars, please do. That helps us a lot. Give us a little rating. Let people know that we are your source for Celtics talk on a daily basis, a regular basis. Once the season gets kicked up again in late September, October, we're back on our daily 5-day routine, 5 shows a week. That's what we do here. So thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for being a big Celtics fan and just really going through this wild ride with us. Really appreciate it. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales.